Okay. It's called the House Land Use Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, March 19th, 3 p.m. And we're going to just get right into our one bill that we have today, House Bill 3098. So I'll open a public hearing on that and ask Representative Huffman to come up and introduce us. If you want lifelines now, you can bring them or later, but I've got Linda Swearingen and Chris Marshall as my next two. So however you prefer to introduce this.
I can get kicked off, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you. Chair and committee members, John Huffman, state rep out of District 59, which includes the Young Life property, which was previously known as Rajneesh Puram, and for those of us that lived in Wasco County during that time, it was an interesting time.
I have a 45 of the Shut Up Sheila song.
Oh,
I really
yeah.
do.
Shut Up Sheila was an awesome
yeah,
song.
If you need it.
But we digress.
Sorry.
To the bill.
I've been working with Young Life, with Richard Whitman out of the governor's office, and John Jennings, who is out of the Central Oregon DLCD office, this past year to figure out a way for Young Life to expand their youth and family camp near Antelope. Young Life originally received approval to convert the illegal city of Rajneesh Puram, which, for those that don't know, was the former home of the followers of the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, through and I can still visualize those cars that they drove into the Dalles to shop with, and it's been all those years ago. Due to the fact that it was already built, Rajneesh Puram's infrastructure was constructed to accommodate over 5,000 full-time residents and to allow thousands of other visitors annually to the remote site. How many have ever been out there?
Many times.
It's a hike.
I didn't wear red, but I was
out
there. just for today.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
I'm losing control quickly.
Now that Young Life is wanting to expand the camp outside the originally approved exceptions process footprint, they need legislative approval in order to make a land use application to Wasco and Jefferson counties. HB 3098 will allow Young Life the opportunity to enlarge their camp to include no more than four additional camps and no more than 100 acres each. They must choose their sites within the 4,000-acre expansion identified on the map. The legislation clearly states that they may only develop up to 1,500 new overnight beds and that the improvement developed must be used for camp-related activities. HB 3098 creates a process for Young Life to file for a conditional use permit in Wasco County and a site plan in Jefferson County. These land use applications trigger a public process and may trigger both hearings and appeals through the Oregon land use system. I happened to read a letter, it was an editorial in the Bend Bulletin last week, and they had written it without calling me for any information or context behind what they wrote. And they were talking about, once again, we're revisiting 2009, which some people on the committee might be familiar with, something that happened in 2009 with the Metolius and the area of critical statewide concern. And so I wrote the bulletin and I said, you know, I met with Richard Whitman, John Jennings. We're trying to follow the land use process that is set up to allow things like this to happen within the land use system. And we are in no way trying to take any authority or process from the counties. This is a process that we have to do at the state level to allow Young Life to apply to Wasco and Jefferson counties, respectively, to do the expansion that they seek. And it is a unique situation. I know Linda and others are going to testify after me about the uniqueness of this situation. I mentioned it briefly about Rajneesh Puram, which was an illegal city. And so it has unique circumstances that we continue to try to deal with today based on what was set up many, many years ago. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will stand down and let others that are much more knowledgeable come up and follow me in testimony. Thank you for your time.
Okay, any questions for our colleague? Wow, geez. Okay.
Easy day. Thank you.
Okay, so then I can add in Dan Boyden. So Linda Swearingen, Chris Marshall, Dan Boyden. Then in the on deck opposed category is Jonathan Manton and Marge Easley. Go ahead.
For the record, Linda Swearingen, I'm from Redmond, Oregon. And with me, I have Chris Marshall and Dan Boyden. I'd like to just give you a quick recap of Washington Family Ranch. First of all, for 100 years, this was a ranch. And then in 1982, it was incorporated as Rajneesh Param. And it had over a 500,000 square feet of buildings. In fact, there were 356 buildings on it. There were several wells. They had 12 miles of road. They had built a 4,300-foot paved airstrip. And as the representative mentioned, they created an infrastructure to handle over 5,000 full-time residents. And in the summertime, they'd have as many as 15,000 residents or tourists to come and visit Rajneesh Param. So as you can imagine, this is bigger than most cities. And then when the commune disbanded in 86 and it fell into bankruptcy, it landed in the hands of Connecticut General Insurance Company, and then it was acquired by Inland Properties, or better known as the Washington Family. And then in 99, it was, prior to that, Wasco County was able to grant an exceptions process for Young Life because the land was already committed. It was no longer being used for an EFU purpose, and the structures were already on it. And so what Wasco County was able to do is they were able to carve out a piece of ground that they said, since this land is already committed and built, we will grant you an exceptions process for this. As long as Young Life expanded within that exceptions area or that exception zone, they were fine. But as soon as they wanted to leave that footprint, and you're going to hear why they want to do that, then all of a sudden, Wasco County and Jefferson County no longer have the ability to approve any expansion outside of that. So, to the bill,
I just got to make sure, because the terminology is complicating. Mm-hmm. They don't have the authority to expand outside that area without going through a new exceptions process for the new area.
That's correct. However, it was approved only because it was an illegal city. It was already built. It was already committed. And so Oregon law doesn't allow them to just pick and choose, well, we want to go ahead and build over here, and you're going to hear why they want to build outside of that zone. So there isn't any legal process for them to follow. Otherwise, they would.
Accept a new exceptions process.
That won't work.
Okay, so I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
We have letters from the agency here saying they should, probably consider the exceptions process. So I do want to hear why that won't work, because I think that'll help all of us.
I mean, I got to tell you, I've represented a lot of clients, and nobody wants to come to the legislature and ask for a change. They'd rather go through Wasco County and Jefferson County, but they really need a pathway in which to do that. We have made an amendment to the bill. This was at the request of Jefferson and Wasco County, so you're going to see an amendment. And in the amendment, it does a couple things. First of all, Wasco County would like to use a conditional use process as they process the new application.
Sorry, do we have any copies? We don't have the amendment.
The dash two?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't receive that.
Maybe you could just verbally describe it a little bit then, and we'll look at it later.
The dash two does two things. First of all, Wasco County would like to continue to use a conditional use process. That's what they're doing now. So when Chris goes in and says, I want to add another building, or I want to make a change on my deck, he has to use a conditional use process. So Wasco County would like us to be consistent with that process. In the case of Jefferson County, they want to use a site plan process. Both are land use decisions. Both require public input. Both require notification of the neighbors, and at the discretion of the county, they can go ahead and trigger a planning commission hearing, which can be appealed, and or they can choose to go directly to the county commission, all of which are appealable. What we've attempted to do is just provide a pathway for Young Life to make application. We don't want to take away anybody's rights to appeal the decision or have input into it.
Sorry, which county wanted which way?
Owasco County wants a conditional use process.
Jefferson wants a
site plan.
Site plan. Okay.
And then Jefferson County also wanted to make sure that the language was consistent with the National Flood Program, Flood Insurance Program. So we put that in there. We've been in communication with both counties, and I'm sure there'll be additional communication between now and the time an application would be made. In fact, we're meeting with both Jefferson and Owasco County to go over some road issues and some other issues that are pertinent to both Owasco, Jefferson County, and to Young Life. So we're trying to keep that dialogue going. And as the representative mentioned, what we've done is we've identified 4,000 acres for the purposes of expansion. Now, you might ask, why didn't you just pick the four sites? We would have done that if we had those identified right now. But remember, what we're attempting to do is create a process for the next 20 to 30 years. And so what we've said is, out of the 62,000 acres, we've identified 4,000 acres, and when we're ready to make application, we can only ask for four camps of no greater than 100 acres within the footprint for those camps. If you'll turn to the first map that you have, it's going to show the sites. Now, what you're going to find in this map is that there's a hashed area, and that's BLM land. And that's one of the issues here that is interesting, in that there is a federal land exchange that's been introduced by Senator Wyden and Merkley that may or may not pass. But because that is in the works, there is a group of individuals, including ONDA, that and some other groups that would like to see this exchange happen, so that we could block up Young Life's holdings and then create two wilderness areas. And I've got a map in here as well that will address that. Your next exhibit is this particular map, just to get an idea of how large this property is. It is almost the size of Portland. It's approximately 13 miles by 12 miles in diameter, and so it's a very, very large piece. And as you can see, to the north of the property is Highway 218. You're going to see Antelope. It's a community of approximately 50. And to the south, Ashwood, another community approximately the size of 50 residents. And the highway is where you would access the camp. You would go past Antelope and head down Cold Camp Road for 4 miles, and then you would be on Young Life property. Now, Owasco County is responsible for maintaining the 4 miles of land from the state highway to Young Life property. Now, we are going to meet with them and discuss some future arrangements around that road, but that's primarily how people access the Young Life property. You can also see within that map, you can see the King residence. That's a private inn holding in the map, and then the Simmons property. And as you can see, the neighbors aren't really close other than the Simmons. The Simmons property is a quarter of a mile, but you cannot actually see the boundary of the property from the Simmons ranch, just due to topography. And then in the next map, you're going to see the before and after map of what the Young Life property would look like if the exchange took place. the goal here is to block it up, because as you can tell, you've got BLM land throughout the property, and the majority of the BLM is not accessible by the public unless they trespass on to Young Life. And so there's a real effort to block it up and then to allow for a wilderness, two different wilderness sites. Now, our legislation is not contingent upon whether or not that happens. In fact, we've identified land that is not covered by the BLM hash marks, so that if that never happens, there's still land available for Young Life to expand. And the primary reason for being outside of that exception zone is just due to topography. If you've been out there, which most of you have been, they're rolling hills, and they don't want the camps all close together. They like to have a separation between the high school camps and the middle school camps as well. And then the next exhibit I want you to take a look at, because I think this is important, is the footprint of the camp. The Canyon Camp, that's 76 acres.
Excuse me, where is that? I can't find that map either.
This is the high school camp.
We're looking for that piece of paper.
Okay, well.
None of us have it. It's not on the list, I don't think.
Okay, well.
That's great. We can look.
You can look.
Okay.
And I'll pass this up here. This is the Canyon camp, the high school camp, and on the reverse side is Creekside, and it's 21 acres. And so the footprints of these camps, they're clustered. They try to keep them so that they're self-contained. They don't, other than the recreation, they're very, very small and very clustered in nature. And then I've also included a letter from Chris to Representative Huffman, and it talks about their impact on the community. And one of the other things I'd like to have him talk about is the school that they have. They have a public school through Jefferson County there. That's where they send their kids. And one of the things that you find very different from this community than others is when people come to Young Life, they stay there because it's quite a distance to the nearest larger full-service community. And so you don't have the traffic patterns with Young Life that you have with other communities. When the children are brought in, they're brought in on buses generally. And the buses come in, drop the children off, and then they leave, and then they come back when the children are ready to be picked up. And on that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Chris, unless you have any questions so far.
Chris.
I'm Chris.
Okay, please.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. A few things I'm going to share today are just primarily about our operation.
Say your name.
My name is
record.
Chris Marshall, and I'm the camp manager at Washington Family Ranch for Canyon, which was the first of the two camps that she shared with you, that Linda shared. Today I just want to help give you an oversight of the operations of the camp and my role there, and and how the community is impacted as well. I oversee the daily workings of our operation and staff. My journey that brought me to Washington Family Ranch began in the early 90s in the landscape industry. During my high school and college years, I worked for a nursery in the Willamette Valley and several design-build landscape contractors providing construction and maintenance services. These experiences took me to the University of Oregon School of Architecture, where I completed my bachelor's in landscape architecture. Following college, I continued working in the landscape industry, meeting with clients, designing landscapes for commercial and residential properties, and working on installation crews. During this time, I also volunteered with Young Life in the Beaverton area, spending time with students. I had previously attended a Young Life camp in the high school that is situated in British Columbia, Canada, and I was familiar with the organization. While volunteering in the Beaverton area with Young Life, I was approached regarding a job designing and installing the landscaping for the original camp at Washington Family Ranch. In 1998, I took this opportunity to work at the ranch and applied my abilities in the area of landscape design, construction oversight, landscape maintenance, and equipment procurement for the day-to-day needs. In 2004, I transitioned from the landscape role to a new role in construction project management. These projects included a camp auditorium that was roughly 10,000 square feet from the ground up, an adult guest lodge that's 10,000 square feet from the ground up, and the support staff lodge remodel of 31,000 square feet, all of these within the current Big Muddy overlay that Linda mentioned. Each of these projects totaled between $2 and $3 million upon completion and incorporated local and non-local contractors and volunteers from around the Pacific Northwest. In 2007, I took on the role of project manager for the Washington Family Ranch Creekside expansion. This was a $34 million project that included infrastructure and utility services, a central campus utility plant, over 100,000 square feet of varied building types, and a pool with waterfalls and five slides. This significant addition was also completed with a blend of local and non-local contractors, volunteers, and staff. 15 months ago, I took on the role of camp manager for Washington Family Ranch Canyon, as I've previously stated. Over the last 15 years, I've had the privilege to see thousands of campers and guests visit Washington Family Ranch and have an amazing experience, probably the best week of their life. There are two seasons to the year at the ranch that may help you understand our operation better, the summer and the school season. The summer season is our busiest time of the year from June through August. To attend camp during summer, campers sign up through local leaders in their hometowns and attend camp with these leaders. These are kids of all races, abilities, family structures, and social classes. Campers get on a bus, in a car, on a plane, and sometimes even a snowmobile in their hometown and travel to Washington Family Ranch. Campers come from around the Pacific Northwest as well as Alaska, Hawaii, Montana, California, and even Texas. We also have international campers traveling from as far-reaching places as Singapore and the Basque of Europe. Buses and private vehicles travel to camp starting in June and then in August for the summer Young Life camping season. Approximately 8,300 campers and leaders arrived in 2012 to Washington Family Ranch. The bus doors open at a spot that offers a view of the facilities, and campers are welcomed into an amazing week of activities, meals, laughter, fun that is challenging and centers around the gospel message of Jesus Christ. Campers are given the opportunity in a non-threatening environment to consider a lifelong faith journey. Throughout the week, campers take part in field games, pool events, sporting events, the ropes course, a giant swing, zip lines, water slides, the carnival, and other activities. Also, campers dine around tables of eight and are served family style for all meals. Exceptional food is served by returning volunteers that were once campers themselves. Every detail from the placement of the utensils on the table to the safety of the ropes course is taken into consideration. It's a primary objective of Young Life to provide an excellent and safe camping experience. I recently had the opportunity to help with a group of campers that had vehicle trouble coming into camp. As I brought them into camp with their bags piled in my older ranch rig, I gave them a brief tour. One of the kids said, "Do you have anything for kids that suck at everything?" It took me a minute to grasp what he was asking. But I had the opportunity to share with this kid that was figuring out life. This was made all for him. It was a powerful moment as he had his eyes glued to the window in anticipation of what that week might hold. As the week draws to a close, campers head back to their homes with their leaders in buses and private cars. Many times we see these campers return to support the camping operation in other capacities as a supporting volunteer or staff member. Once the end of August arrives and Labor Day occurs, we transition to the school guest season. This looks different than summer. Washington Family Ranch Creekside, the newer camp, closes from October until May, and Washington Family Ranch Canyon remains open for a myriad of guest groups through the winter into spring. Most of these school season guest groups are church groups, youth groups, schools, both public and private. We also host other nonprofit organizations, one being Wild Canyon Games, which is a team-based adventure competition that supports youth organizations in the Pacific Northwest, another being government agencies. We've had the USDA, Jefferson County Fire, Wasco County Economic Development Commission, to name a few, that may be looking to host a small conference or a meeting. These groups book the facility and bring in their own speakers, musicians, and administration to operate these weekends or weekday gatherings. Approximately 150 people live at the ranch full-time, as Linda mentioned, in order to ensure that the facility runs efficiently and smoothly. This is comprised of staff, spouses, and children. These members of the community not only serve at the ranch, but they also contribute to the bigger, larger Central Oregon community by purchasing groceries and consumer goods, visiting doctors and dentists, stopping at the local fuel station, supporting local restaurants and entertainment venues. Two staff members recently have purchased land in Jefferson and Crook County as their primary residences as well. To give you an idea of what's nearby, Linda began to talk about that. Madras is 50 miles away and just over an hour from the ranch with the majority of the needed public services. Antelope is closer to the ranch at 18 miles with a cafe that is open intermittently depending upon the season and ownership. Maupin is 43 miles away and 1.5 hours by car with limited services. It is 97 miles and approximately 2 hours by car to reach the Dalles, leaving Madras, Redmond, and Bend as the best options for these staff needs and services. Currently, 13 students are enrolled in the Big Muddy School, which is a Jefferson County School District education facility. Attendance has been as high as 21 students during its time of operation. It is our desire to continue to contribute and support the local community. One other thing Linda mentioned was our road. And as you're coming into the road, she talked about the first 4 miles being maintained by the Wasco County Transportation Department. The remaining portion, which is close to 12 miles of muddy road, is privately owned with public access, and we provide the maintenance on that road. So that is the primary access to the property. Thanks for your time and efforts to provide a hearing for this House bill. We ask that you support House Bill 3098 and pass it on for further consideration.
Okay. This is Dan?
Dan Boyden. Dan,
welcome.
I'm Dan Boyden. I'm from Hood River. Chris has talked about the thousands of kids that have been served out at Washington Family Ranch. I have the opportunity to work on the adult side, introducing adults to the ranch and what the great things they're doing for kids. 11 years ago, I took an acquaintance out to the ranch. His name is Randy. We were actually out on a pheasant hunt. We had a great day, but the significant part of the trip was in the evening when we sat around the old ranch house, and Randy talked about his successful business career, his great jobs that he was doing, but the truth was his personal life and his spiritual life was a train wreck, and he broke down that night and agreed to commit more to his personal life and to his family. Well, 4 months later, his marriage was in crisis. His wife left, and he called the four of us that were out there with him, and we listened and talked and prayed, and after a number of tears and hard discussions, that family got back together, and it's a beautiful family, two girls, and Randy and Billie Jean are now stronger than ever, as you can imagine, going through a fire like that. He claims that the ranch was an absolute turning point in his life, and that it absolutely saved his family. Randy now takes men out there. He's probably taken dozens of men out there and shared that same story with them and tried to help them with their marriages. Billie Jean is volunteering now with an organization called Young Lives, and it is a group of girls, high school girls with babies. And these girls are pretty much outcast by everybody in their life, including their families. Pretty much most of society has turned their back on them. Billie Jean meets with them every other week. This summer, she took six girls from Hood River out there, and Young Life did a special Young Lives camp. Every girl had a nanny for her baby, and they would take the babies away, and the girls could be girls again and talk and share and get their lives back on track. And I tell these stories just because of it's Young Life is, I call it a snowball. You start with Randy, and Randy took 12 guys out there, and Billie Jean took six girls with six babies out there. There's 24 people now that have been impacted by the ranch, and and those 24 go on to reach others. And it's the reason that we're here today is because that property has touched so many lives and had such an impact on so many people that there's just tremendous growth. 6 years after this, Randy got together a group of architects and engineers and planners, and we came up with an idea of how to use the remainder of Wasco County's overlay zone. The camp was on approximately 90% of the buildable land in that area, and there was one small section, and we created an architectural idea for another camp in the remaining canyon and with the remaining beds that were allowed in that overlay zone. Well, within a few months, a donor said, I will give you the money for this entire camp. It's a $34 million gift, and Chris and the rest of the crew out there at Young Life built this camp for 350 middle school kids. And that camp has been wildly successful. It's completely booked. Kids from all over the state of, well, all over the West Coast get to go to this camp and meet with leaders and be with adults and just have an amazing time. What this second camp did was allow Young Life to reach into the middle schools. This is a middle school camp. It's water themed, more for younger kids. And Young Life has exploded in the middle school camping throughout the state of Oregon. So not only are they growing in Central Oregon, growing jobs, growing economic activity, they're also reaching out. There's a new club in Klamath Falls. There's a new club in Medford. All over the state, there's jobs being created because of the impact of this camping situation in the center of the state. I think my point is that this camp is an amazing avenue for social change. Just like Randy and Billie Jean are going out now and helping kids, at-risk kids, young girls particularly, this camp is doing a lot for the social fabric of our state. And my point is that you all are up here serving. You want the best for your state. You want to create a legacy. You want to create social change. You want to improve families. You want to improve kids' lives. And that's why you're serving. And thank you, by the way, for your service. But I'd like you to consider this camp as a partner in creating social change throughout our state, well, throughout the entire western region of the United States, and how they are helping without any investment from the state. This is all privately funded. This $35 billion came from out of state, right into the center of our great state, and it's helping thousands of kids every year. Would like to make the point that this is something really good for our state, and it's consistent with a lot of the goals that you guys are trying to accomplish for our state. And we need your support with this bill to actually have a pathway to expand so we can serve more kids, serve more families like Randy, and help our state become a great, great place for families and kids.
Great, thank you. Any questions for these three? Representative Davis.
Can you put in context how many acres the property is, how many acres the two existing camps are, and how many acres we're talking about for the potential new camps?
Well, we've limited ourselves to 100 acres.
Start with the total camp size, the property size.
Oh, 62,000 acres. It's okay. Like 12 miles by 13 miles, so it's vast.
Okay.
And the two existing camp footprints are 21 acres and 76 acres.
Okay, so maybe a tenth of a percent of that total property size, something like that?
Very small percentage. Now remember that where Canyon is located, that camp, it's actually larger than that just because parts of the old Rajneesh Param are there. But the camp itself is 76 acres.
So, sorry, I was just doing some math. So on the map where it says 1320, that's not footprint of buildings and such, that's...
That's the exceptions area.
Exceptions area.
Yeah. And that takes a sewer lagoon in, and it takes the airstrip and all the ancillary buildings, and they're some distance apart.
Any other questions? Representative Unger.
To this question about the siting, my understanding, the bill currently reads that we can have, you can have 400-acre sites, but it doesn't limit it to that. That's just kind of the starting point.
No, that's it. Four is it.
I think the language says that including but not limited to 400-acre sites. I'm pretty sure, but I was long last week, so I won't go too far.
Yeah. We only need four 100-acre sites, and the reality is they probably won't be that large, but...
Yeah. On Section 3, you may develop area facilities including but not limited to, and then it just goes through the whole list there. So if that's really your intention, just to limit to those things, it might be good just to say that that's all you're going to do.
Yeah, because we've got on page 1, line 28, up to four separate campsites containing 100 or fewer acres.
But Chair Klein, I'm looking at 25 and 26 there. Line. On page 1, I think.
On page 1.
Chair Klein.
Representative Davis.
I think your point is correct, and we would want to move that up to four separate campsites containing 100 acres or fewer to a separate section that doesn't include the language, including but not limited to. And probably the same thing for the 1,500 beds.
Right. Yeah.
We
yeah.
don't have a problem with that
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
He's our one lawyer, so we defer to
him. Okay.
What he said is probably, that sounds very legal. Yeah.
just move around some words. It'll work out. It'll be fine.
No, man, that lost it.
Actually, these weren't even our words. This was your legal counsel's words, but
we're all familiar with that.
The Harrisons out there. They always get it right.
We love our legal counsel, so. Okay, yeah, we can address that.
Other questions? So I have one. First, I should say that... my staff person, who it's his birthday. Happy birthday, Dan. I forgot that till about an hour ago. He was one of the first Young Life volunteers into the site when it was purchased to see what in the world you had bought exactly. And all the tunnels, he was like the first guy into some of the rooms, apparently. So he's been lobbying me on this bill every day. My question is, you know, when I was in high school, I went to Drift Creek here, but all my friends went to Woodleaf while I went to Boy State. They were at the same time, and you sort of had to pick. So which now overall is the most popular within the organization? Because this didn't exist when I was there. So Woodleaf was the big one everyone wanted to go to at that time, but I don't know how this fits in now.
Oh, that's a loaded question.
I know.
I would say... by sheer numbers, Washington Family Ranch is one of the largest, the largest demographically, or geographically, but also in the numbers that attend in a given summer. But that really is beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Malibu is still a big contingent for the Northwest as well. So.
It was a sore point for a long time that I went to Boy State and not Woodleaf. You know, but it's not like I didn't go to Drift Creek and other things. It's just I didn't go to Malibu and I didn't go to Woodleaf, and so that was a real problem. Amongst friends. Yeah, apparently. Yeah. Well, still apparently in my conscience. Kevin Goodwin's going to be texting me in a minute. Yep, told you so. Okay, anything else? Now, okay, so thank you all, and then let's have Marge Easley, Jonathan Manton, and Ed Johnston, who signed up. I don't know if you're for or against the bill.
I'm against the bill.
Okay, we'll come up with this group because this is the other against.
Oh, okay.
You'll go third. Marge, I got you first, and Jonathan second.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Marge Easley, and I'm here to represent the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed citizen participation in government. We have longstanding positions in support of our statewide land use planning program with local implementation. We believe that the state should have the primary responsibility for establishing the broad framework of planning goals and for coordinating comprehensive land use plans with participation by citizens and by local and regional governments. We feel that this proposal, and we're not here to question the value and the benefits of the Young Life facility. We are questioning the process. We believe that it seeks to bypass the established order of our land use processes, which include the critical components of local government review and local citizen involvement. This project, in our view, is a one-off exception to both the statewide and local processes. We believe that projects such as this, which are specific projects which do not benefit the public as a whole, should be dealt with through the exceptions process at the local level and not through legislative action. We believe it can be compared to other development projects that have come before the legislature in recent years. The League objected then, and we object now, and we will continue to object when we feel that there's an upending of the land use process. And I thank you for considering the League's views.
So, Marge, real quick, I know the Dash 2s weren't available. They are
right
now. So if you could take a look
at
the local process that was verbally described to see if that makes you feel any better
about
the local process.
I definitely will. I hadn't had a chance to
see. And it wasn't in our system. It is now. We apologize for that.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Clem.
We can give you a paper copy as well, actually, if you like.
My name is Jonathan Manton, and I'm testifying in opposition to this bill on behalf of Central Oregon Land Watch. I'll repeat the things that were just stated by the League of Women Voters as far as this being a this bill expressly exempts one entity from having to comply with the land use laws, and that's just not fair to those who do. There is a path for this group to follow. It's destination resort law. So if you look at what's proposed in the bill, is up to and including, as Representative Unger pointed out, which is obviously a problem, but 1,500 overnight beds, which is overnight units, campsites, shooting ranges, recreational facilities, cooking and eating facilities, permanent housing for staff, camp activity buildings, permanent structures, roads, and utilities. These all fit exactly with what our destination resort law sets out. So if they want to get approval to do what they're talking about, they should go to the counties, Wasco and Jefferson, and have these properties mapped for destination resort. So we have a process in place for them to comply with. We don't need a special law that would say the rest of the statewide laws don't apply to you and create this kind of special entitlement that you have before you. And the problem with that is that we're seeing this in a number of instances of late, where there are lots of times where groups will come to you, the legislature, and say, you know, either the local process is not working well for us, or for whatever reason that they may come to you. Maybe it's just easier. Maybe it's a financial decision that it's cheaper for them to come to you with a special entitlement bill. But we're seeing a pattern. We have these special entitlement bills that are coming before the legislature each and every session, and collectively they pose a significant threat to our land use system. So we're very strongly in opposition to this bill. We would encourage the folks to study the law a little bit closer and advance their effort, but do it within current law, and they can do that through the destination resort processes. And then I just want to point out some particular concerns with this bill as well. The first was already mentioned by Representative Unger there, where it's this broad language where it says that Young Life may develop expansion area facilities, including but not limited to, and then you go through and list all the things that are in the bill. So there's literally no limits. There's a provision that says, except as authorized in Section 3 of this section, Young Life may not develop residential dwellings. Well, Section 3 is what I just read to you before that says that they're not limited to. So it's kind of craftily written to avoid any limits. And then the last is there's a section on this page 2, line 26, that mentions that once the county has received their plan, it shall approve the site plan as long as the county finds that the site plan does a number of things.
One of these things is page 3, line 1, minimizes adverse impacts on Native American cultural sites. So that language, if you think about it, says that as long as the entity minimizes impacts, then that's the standard that they're supposed to do. So let's just kind of think that through a little bit. What would it take to minimize impact to a Native American cultural site? Could that be burial site? Let's say, just as an example, if there were 10 grave sites found and only one was disturbed, the other 9 were protected, you have certainly minimized impacts. So you could get away with a lot of damage to important cultural sites and still minimize impact, not eliminate impacts. So I don't speak for the Confederate tribes of the Warm Springs Indian Reservation of Oregon, clearly. They do that themselves. But I do speak as someone, and on behalf of my client, who believes that we should respect these cultural sites very profoundly and very carefully. And the standard that this bill lays out falls very short of providing that respect and level of protection. So when you get these bills that come before you that's written on behalf of one entity to benefit one entity, these are the kind of things that I think are problematic that you can see, and it's why we don't tend to do this. So I would strongly urge you to not support this bill and encourage the folks to go about their process through destination resort law and comply with existing law instead of coming to you with a special entitlement. Thank you.
Edwin?
Good afternoon. Ed. My name is Edward Johnston. I am the President of the United States of America's Constitutional for America Elected and Public Employees Oversight Committees. We are totally against this bill. We've lost thousands of acres in this state to nonprofits and programs at the loss of Oregonians and legal Americans who are not properly compensated for the confiscations of these lands. Americans have a legal right to be compensated for their programs, for their losses. By federal law, every person under color of any statute, ordinance, regulations, customs, urge, state, territory, or subjects are caused to be subject, deprived of any rights, privileges, constitutional rights under Title 42 U.S.C. 1963, we have a right on our public lands and rights. I will have a copy of this information that I want to provide here. It's called The People and the Corporations. The people, I mean, versus the corporations, and that's you, the elected and public employees, your corporation. You have no legal rights telling me what I can do on my land. You have no legal rights telling me what I can do in public. I have filed, too, with the Elected and Public Employees Union. We are filing with the structure of the police department and code enforcers. They have no legal authority on public people's private lands harassing us publicly. Their job by state and federal law, and if you read the structure, I will provide to you an email, that their job is to patrol and to monitor elected and public employees. All right? I do a lot of research on the laws and the structure. You know,
can I just ask one question? I just want to make sure you're here on the right bill.
Yes, I'm here on this bill because there's 4,000 acres. We don't know how it was acquired, if it was actually donated originally, how it was taken from the state of Oregon residents. I'd like to see all the deeds and trust and how the land was transferred because the public has a legal right to be compensated. You cannot take public land from the public without compensating us entirely. And I have the federal laws to prove it. It's on my website, OregonTrackers.com. Look at civil rights. The laws are there. I understand how the legal system works, and especially how the elected and public employees work for the public, and attorneys work for the British government. I'm called a nonprofit agency that's registered with that, and I can provide the evidence. Okay, and I have provided. I've been in and out of this building for 20 years. On this stuff. And now it's time that we start standing up for our state sovereignty. I educate, and that's where these people should be educating their kids on how to file their UCC-1 filings. So that way, and look at opt-in options. Yes, this is real. All right, of the 1933 Banking Act. If we're going to have freedom, let's teach them how to write it off to the Treasury the way the Banking Act of House Resolution 192 was correct. Okay, and this is what they're talking about. These programs are going to end up in tax rolls. We're going to end up more nonprofits that are going to be draining off people's straw man accounts. We don't need to keep draining things in these processes on our straw man accounts, billing them to the children through the straw man process. I mean, this is horrendous that we keep punishing our children and doing this, psychologically bringing them up this way. If we taught our children responsibility and the laws and respect, we wouldn't have these problems that we're allegedly in society claiming. You know, I mean, we have land out there that's depriving hunters and fishermen of the rights to feed themselves by the state of Oregon, as I did in 2004. Legal rights. We have a right to feed ourselves without asking permission from the state. And you're depriving our food resources. And yes, I've had the bills, and I filed on this. You know, and I'm testifying again, and I'm going to be more on this. You know, excuse my attire. I just got out February 17th with a heart attack. You know, so it's been quite experience with my medical. I have 17 broken discs, or blown discs, crushed back from the five discs, and crushed back was from Newport Police Department in 1998 when I put the subsistence ballot title out to the public to put our constitutional rights. So Newport cops tried to beat me to death.
So I got to keep us on the land use. Land use.
Sure, all this is on record.
Land use.
I know it's land use because you've been going after my land too. So it is land use. So I'm bringing it up with my history so it's on record because nobody's going to run away with I'm filing. Okay? The one thing is that Title 18 has been violated in a lot of these circumstances in our state. And I will be providing the evidence to each one of you on the structure. I have an evidence package I'll be providing to you with the federal laws dealing with our rights, the sovereignty of citizens. All right, because we go by the de facto government, and all of us know the truth that straw man can't de facto government. Now it's time for us to start teaching our children the state sovereignty and responsibility. We don't need to have more programs where we're destroying children, you know, that creates foster programs and everything else. We've already had problems with other camps in the state where children were molested in the camps. Those have been in the headlines over the years. What are we doing to our children? Are we setting them up another thing to destroy more families? I mean, we've got to look at the whole picture of this structure, what we are doing to our state and our families by these programs, how we're going to be billing for them, how they pay. They say they raise the money on their own. They're nonprofit. Most nonprofits get their funding from the government. The elected and public employees that pass bills like this structure does, and they get their funding that way, billed off of straw man accounts. When are we going to stop billing our children and start educating them so they can live free? When are we going to give back our rivers and streams that we have a right to fish and hunt without buying a license by our Treaty of 1864? That's our state constitution. It states it too. So when are we going to act on our state constitution, our state sovereignty, let me state it correctly? Because I'm a sovereign citizen. I have never signed my rights away in this state for any reason, and I keep being attacked. I'm going to be wrapping
okay,
it up.
Okay,
but this is the point we need to teach our children. Instead of keep creating problems so we could justify employment down the road, one statute or another, and that's what these programs are doing, these camps have done. We talk about them in the media when they've done it. We've had the meetings. I've seen the meetings over the Capitol. So let's say a kid gets raped and goes through another thing. Then we go do the trauma. Insurance don't cover it. Everybody turns their back and say, oh, poor child. So until we start teaching responsibility back to our children, I'm totally against any of these things, including any loss of public lands. We need that to raise our food so we have a future for our children to eat off of, because the stores and raising farm food is not the answer. So that is the point that we're looking at.
Okay.
It all rolls into one, and
thank
I will put a package in so you can read the point, and I will make sure you get the other legal facts on the issue.
We appreciate that. Every Oregonian is heard here.
Thank you. Questions? Could you just... Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You are a great man. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Jonathan, I guess I wanted to read something here, and this is a quote by somebody that I heard this session. So what's the problem? Well, we do have some problems. We have some significant problems with our land use system. The program has gotten more and more complex over the years. The cost of managing our urban growth system has gone up. The amount of time it takes to go through an urban growth boundary amendment has extended to the point where by the time we're done with urban growth boundary amendment, it's basically time to start over again. There's been an enormous amount of litigation. And last and most important is a lack of transparency. Our citizens have enormous difficulty understanding our land use program. It has gotten so complex that the average person can't effectively participate in land use decision making at the local level. And that's the real problem long term in terms of stability of our system. Take a guess.
Chair Clem and Representative Cameron, I'm not sure I understand your question, but I would add to that that...
Who said it?
Is that what you're asking?
No, you don't have to guess.
It's trivia, kind of.
My point being is that Mr. Chair, if I may, it's tough to do it at the local level. It's gotten so complicated with litigation and everything that we have to do, it's gotten tough to do it at the local level, and that's why people are coming here to ask for these types of things. And I do think it's the legislative body's responsibility to make these types of decisions. So I respect, respectfully, and this was said by somebody in the governor's office.
Okay. And if I may respond, please. Chair Clement,
yes.
Committee. Thank you. I understand the quote very well. And I would just, I would note that if you look at statistically the number of, especially, so Central Oregon Land Watch is who I represent, so I can only speak to kind of what's going on in that part of the state. But I can tell you that if you look at the number of approvals at the local government level, it's huge. It's very, very rare that the local governments in Central Oregon deny a development proposal. And it's even much more rare when one of those, approvals gets appealed. Like, if you look at the number of appeals before LUBA, it's not very large. We average one or two a year for the last several years and prevail in those cases over 70% of the time. I would add to as far as like difficulties within the land use system, at the local level, you have several counties throughout the state that are now charging appeal fees before you get to LUBA in excess of several thousand dollars. So the citizens are shut out of the process at the local level because of appeal fees. Mostly across the state, it's about $250 to $400 to appeal that decision from the planning commission or the first step of the process. The first step is you put your application into a planning commissioner. They say yay or nay. And then if you want to appeal that, you do to the county commissioners. But like I said, most across the state, most counties are $250, $400 for that. There are a handful of counties that charge several thousand dollars for that. So there's a shutting out of citizen participation at that. And I would add that to the list of things that we should work on to fix our land use system is more citizen participation. That's goal one of our land use system, and that would be great. In this matter, when you're talking about something that might apply to the story at hand today with this particular bill, the destination resort statutes are not that hard to understand. You can look at them and see. And the first step is that you go to your county. The county has to approve a destination resort map, and that would apply here, so that they wouldn't need to come to you with a special bill. There's a process for them to follow.
Follow up.
So, is the ranch currently a destination resort with all their camps they have today?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's a good question. I don't know if it has received that designation now. I don't think that it has. I think it's operating as a different, like, conditional use, maybe?
An exception. Yeah.
But for their expansion plans on this 4,000 acre, when they lay out the overnight units and the residences and the recreational facilities, everything that they're proposing to do with this bill would fit perfectly under our destination resort statutes. So if they just proposed to do that, they could do it.
One last question. Mm-hmm.
So
the way that I read the amendment, so they would still have to go through local processes in two counties and have public input to be able to get that permission, correct?
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Cameron, I'm just looking at the amendment now for the first time. I hadn't seen it, so I don't want to speak authoritatively to that. But as I understand, what this would still do would be a kind of conditional
use permit in one. And a site plan consideration in the other.
So there would be chance for public to give input on those two processes?
I just don't. Chair Clement, members of the committee, I just don't know. I'm not familiar enough with that proposal to say. I assume that there would be some public participation, certainly. But I don't want to speak authoritatively. I don't know how the particulars of that would work out, having just seen this right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative, thank you, Chair Clem. Thanks for your testimony. Could you maybe speak to, if we're talking about citizen involvement, if you compare these kind of one-off legislative proposals to the normal process, which typically has, Marge, maybe this is a question for you, has more citizen involvement?
You're talking about at the county level versus here at the legislature?
The normal exceptions process versus this the legislative process that we're going through here.
I believe that both have citizen involvement, but our land use system demands that that system start at the local level with local citizen involvement being first and foremost. And I think that that is one of the primary goals that the League of Women Voters is pushing for.
Thank you.
So I have a question. You know, I'm thinking this through, and I am no fan of the destination resort statute, as you know. But when I saw this, that's not the statute I thought of because of all the requirements for on-site public amenities, which usually means a golf course, and frankly, it usually means a subdivision of, it's not supposed to be that, it's supposed to be about things like this, actually, or tourism, or temporary visits, and then you leave, and it's become instead ways to just build your you know, your home out in the country and call it a city. I'm not sure about the destination resort statute versus like the private park statute or something that's about camping and, you know, it just does. I'm not sure it's the right fit, partially because of the requirement to spend whatever it is, $5 or $7 million on site in public recreation, which is typically meant a golf course. And I don't know that it's, you know, in our interest to promote that here.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, if I could just quickly respond in the bill that that's before you, page 1, line 29, lists the recreational facilities that the entity is proposing. Those include, but are not limited to, areas suitable for ball fields, volleyball courts, archery and shooting ranges, hiking and biking trails, horseback riding, tennis courts, gymnasium, aquatic recreation facilities, zip lines, climbing facilities, and go-kart tracks.
Maybe you get up to $5 million.
It's not a golf course, but
no. I guess what I was thinking about when I first heard about this was the exceptions process versus the destination resort process. And obviously, they already went through the exceptions process once. But I'm not sure I agree. Just, you know, I'm not trying to give away a view on the bill. I'm not sure that's the right statute to point people again versus another exceptions process for their next area or some legislative remedy. Mostly because I don't really like that process, and I think it's broken and doesn't work at all. But it is the law, so of course it's people's right to go through it. But it's kind of it's dysfunctional, I think, currently.
Rep. Chair, I had a comment I wanted to add to that.
It should be about one of the questions asked, because the way we work here, we have more people who traveled here, and if nobody asked you a question, you can chime in.
Well, I wanted to add on to that with the surveys and that structure, what's done, because I know surveys were done, that were even done on my property illegally, and I know it's done around the county where other companies will pay to have surveys done on people's property illegally filed.
Okay.
So I don't, you know, I'm just throwing that out because it is a reality that happens, and people do get their lives threatened when you start standing up against it.
That's true.
So I wanted to make sure it was added. Yeah. Thank you.
I think we have surveyor bills next week. We'll talk to them.
Okay, I would love to be on that, and I'll send you what I'm filing.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And can I get John Castle, Steve Atkinson, and Julie Reeves up next? Okay, John, please, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is John Castles. I live in the Portland area, and I am privileged to serve as a trustee of the M.J. Murdoch Charitable Trust. And I've been asked to speak about answering the question, why does the Murdoch Trust support Young Life and the Washington Family Ranch and its programs? Just as background information for you, the Murdoch Trust was created by the will of the late Jack Murdoch, who is a co-founder of Tektronix. And we have been operating since 1975. We serve a 5-state region of the Pacific Northwest. Annually, we give about a couple hundred grants per year to nonprofits, totaling between $30 and $40 million. Over the years, we have given grants exceeding $4 million to Young Life's Washington Family Ranch. And the reasons for that are the following. First of all, we invest in excellence. And we believe that Young Life is the most experienced operator of youth camps in America. They have the finest programs, staff, food service, amenities, facilities, recreational activities, and so forth. And we believe that the Washington Family Ranch is the premier family camp and camp for kids in the Northwest, and I would venture to say in the whole United States. As you've heard, it's a very large camp. It serves thousands of kids per year, and the most frequent quote from high school and middle school kids that attend a Young Life camp is, "That was the best week of my life." And so, Young Life focuses on character development. They also focus on life skills. And no one does youth camps better than Young Life. We've supported Malibu in British Columbia, as you've heard, and we've supported the Washington Family Ranch and other smaller camps that Young Life operates throughout our five-state region of the Pacific Northwest. We classify youth organizations into three segments, including early intervention and crisis intervention. And we believe that Young Life focuses on both prevention and early intervention. As you all know, when you think about social service organizations and our bulging prison population, preventative programs cost society much less than do programs for crisis intervention and recovery. Programs like Head Start, Junior Achievement, Friends of the Children, and Young Life, these programs can save millions, if not billions, of dollars in societal costs down the road. Let's be clear, Young Life is a Christian camp. Kids are invited to attend. They are exposed to the gospel message. And, you know, there's no coercion involved. Kids have the opportunity to accept the gospel message and follow it in their lives. But those that do not choose to make a commitment are treated no differently from the other campers. And, in fact, it is precisely because of their Christian message that the Murdoch Trust chooses to support the Washington Family Ranch as and other Young Life properties. Finally, the state of Oregon and its citizens, I think, can be immensely proud of Young Life's Washington Family Ranch. In the footsteps of the failed Rajneeshee cult that preceded them on that property, Young Life's Washington Family Ranch is a wonderful story of redemption and hope for thousands of kids every year. I hope that you'll support this bill. Thank you.
Steve?
My name is Steve Atkinson, and thank you for the opportunity to share. I'm the president of the Master's Plan Foundation, which is a private foundation of the Bassinius family. We have invested in the Ministry of Young Life for years because we believe in its mission to introduce kids to Jesus Christ and to help them grow in their faith. We were involved at the beginning of the Washington Family Ranch, but that was based on what we saw as potential and what could happen out there. And now we have the history of over 10 years to look back and see what happened and to see the impact on kids, on families, on neighborhoods, communities. It's exciting to see what's gone on there at the Young Life property. In addition, and people have mentioned, and I was told I had 3 minutes, so I'm going to actually try and come in under that. When you look at what's happened beyond just the high school ministry, the ministry to families, they also did a first responder camp out there where they had first responder families from all over the state of Oregon, police officers, firefighters, EMT, and it was amazing when you look at the different ways that the property is being used. I understand the main reason we're involved is the faith component, and we might not share the same faith. But I think that it is undeniable to look at the role of a caring adult in a kid's life. The Gates Foundation did an exhaustive study. When they came back, they said, as people, we are hardwired to connect. In other words, we want to belong to a community. And more than ever, there is a need for caring adults to invest in kids' lives. I like it the way Craig Barnes, who is the pastor of the National Presbyterian Church in Washington, D.C., said it about Young Life. He said, it ceases to surprise me the number of people that come through my church that have come to faith through the ministry of Young Life. He said, for those of you that don't know, Young Life is a ministry focused on high school kids. Young Life leaders have mastered the art of spending time with kids. No better yet, wasting time with kids. And if you've ever had a kid, you realize it's about a quantity of time you spend. And that's what Young Life does a wonderful job of. We look at the property. We're excited about the investment that we made, its return, and we're going to continue to stay involved out there. Young Life's great for kids. Young Life's great for adults, for families, communities, and for the Northwest. We really appreciate your support of this bill. Thank you.
Julie. Hello. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Julie Reeves, and I am a Young Life leader at David Douglas High School in Southeast Portland. My husband and I have been involved at David Douglas as teachers, coaches, and Young Life leaders for over 15 years in the same community. It is in those 15 years that I have come to believe that kids at David Douglas High School and many other areas, but specifically in our community, have two major obstacles in the way of them leading successful and meaningful lives. The first obstacle is poverty. David Douglas is nearing 90% free and reduced lunch, so many kids are coming from single parents working multiple jobs, leaving many kids without a strong influence at home. The result is that kids are forced to live in a survival mode, living day to day, not thinking more than 1 or 2 weeks into the future. Secondly, David Douglas is the largest high school in Oregon, this year having over 3,000 students. So to say kids can get lost and feel invisible is an understatement. I recently read in a report conducted by the Commission for Children at Risk, doctors, scientists, and mental health professionals claim that what youth need more than anything right now is to be connected to people who are committed to one another over time. Teenagers are offered this chance to connect through Young Life, and a week at Washington Family Ranch accelerates this process of connection. When I think of the impact Washington Family Ranch has had on students, the list goes on and on, but I want to take a few minutes just to tell you about three of them that I've gotten to know over the last 15 years. Ryan. I had Ryan in biology 11 years ago, and he was what we would call a pothead. He was a smart kid, but definitely running with the wrong crowd. Here is what he had to say about his experience at camp. Almost 10 years ago, I went to summer camp with all my friends and some of my favorite teachers. At the time, I am sure I was only interested in the cute girls, fun activities that camp offered, but I was soon struck with something so much more. I was able to connect with my leaders on a deep level. To this day, these men are still involved in my life in a huge way and are two of my biggest role models. I can honestly say that I would not be the same person I am today without the influence of these men. Ryan is now a high school teacher and a Young Life leader, and no longer a pothead, I might add. Ashley. Ashley grew up with an alcoholic father and seemed to be headed down the wrong path in a hurry, but all that began to change when she decided to go to camp. She said, "Camp provided an opportunity to get away from all the pressures of my daily teenage life. One of the greatest parts was getting to spend a week with my leader. Camp was amazing, and from that day forward, she committed to being there for me. 13 years later, I am thankful that I get to call my Young Life leader my friend and one of my spiritual mentors. If I didn't have that time with her at camp, I cannot imagine what my life would look like today." Ashley is now 27 years old, an insurance broker, and a Young Life leader. Lastly, Stephen. Stephen grew up with his dad in and out of prison, and his mother a drug addict. Stephen basically raised himself, and as you can guess, kids don't raise great kids. He had a 1.0 GPA his first 2 years in high school. And when he met his Young Life leaders, he was basically couch surfing with no home of his own. But then Stephen spent a week just last summer at Washington Family Ranch. When asked to describe what a week at camp meant to him, he said, "When I was sitting by that pool at camp on the fifth night, it was like I knew for the first time in my life I had a purpose, and I was going to make it." Stephen is now a senior, still couch surfs, but spends many of those nights on his Young Life leader's couches. He is going back to Washington Family Ranch for a month this summer to volunteer so that other kids can have the same experience he had. He is on track to graduate this spring, which is hard to do coming from a 1.0, and he hopes to one day work for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I have absolutely no doubt that because of the authentic long-term relationships that are built at camp, hundreds of lives in the David Douglas community have been changed. Kids that were headed down the road towards addiction, crime, depression, suicide, and so many other forms of brokenness are filled with hope. And hope affects every aspect of a person's life. Because of this hope, we have seen kids move from a survival mentality to a future mentality. Kids actually thinking about their future, knowing they have a purpose and that there are people in their life that are willing to help them get there. Teenagers need to feel connected to people who are going to be a part of their life long term. Washington Family Ranch provides a catalyst for these connections to take place, and clearly the more kids that are able to feel connected, the better. Thank you.
Any questions for these three? What was the name of the last student you, Stephen?
Stephen.
Could you make sure if he goes to work for the ODFNW that he doesn't seize anyone's property or illegally survey anyone's property? Because later it could come back to haunt us. Okay, with that, thank you, and Stephen.
Yeah. Thanks.
Anybody else here on these bills?
Trickman.
Yeah, Representative Davis.
I'd like to ask Linda Swearingen a couple more questions.
Yeah, Linda, could
that's possible. Sorry, yeah. Committee.
No, no problem.
Yeah. I know. Keeping up to here till 5, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks,
that's
Linda.
That's the end of the list. Please. Yep.
Do you have a response to the claims that there's a process you could go through and you're just trying to end run the local process?
Chair Clem,
I mean, that's the claim,
yeah,
right?
Chair Clem, members of the committee, I've represented a lot, if not almost every destination resort in Oregon, as Chair Clem knows. And we've worked on legislation since 2003 to amend that that statute. And first of all, a destination resort has three components. It has home sites, it has overnight lodging, that's rented nightly, not by the week. We're not talking about dormitories that take place, and we're talking about a huge public component like a golf course or something on that scale. And I find it odd that Central Oregon Land Watch, which has sued almost every project I've ever had, would now ask that we would try to convert a youth camp into a destination resort. It just doesn't fit. And if in fact we were able to use the exceptions process, we wouldn't be here today. We would go to Wasco County and to Jefferson County, and we would merely try to morph something into that process. But the only reason that worked in the first place is it was already built. We had an illegal city that we were able to convert into a campsite. But once we move outside of that footprint and begin to develop new small condensed campsites, there isn't a way to get there. And I will tell you, we are not trying to circumvent the public process. If you've ever filed a conditional use permit or a site plan, all of a sudden neighbors are notified. A land use process is in place. Hearings are generally held. And if a hearing is not held and a citizen wants to appeal it, they merely file an appeal. They can appeal all the way to the Supreme Court. So this isn't any different than any other land use process. What we're attempting to do is to allow Jefferson and Wasco County the opportunity to allow the camp to expand using the land use process that's in place. But without this, we can't get there.
Follow up. And what had the county said to when you've come to them and said we'd like to try an exception process? And who has said it?
Well, we have worked very closely with Wasco County and Jefferson County, the governor's office, and DLCD. I'm surprised today to hear that they're suggesting now that we try an exceptions process. I guess it's easy just to say, why don't you try this and see if it works, and if it doesn't work, you know, in several years, come back and we'll try to fix it. It's just that
Linda, sorry, I got to have you answer his actual question, though, which was who at the county did you talk to?
We've talked with each of the county commissioners in both Wasco County and in Jefferson County. We have worked with their both planning departments. In fact, the Dash 2 amendments are a result of our discussions with both Jefferson and Wasco County.
And they said, we can't do this by exception, so go to the legislature.
They do not believe that we can do it through an exceptions process, that this is the only process that will work, is to come back to the legislature. I mean, theoretically, I guess you could go ahead and apply for an exceptions process, but, you know, all you have to do is read what the law says to say, this just doesn't fit. I mean, theoretically, you can apply for anything. But why would we want to do that when it doesn't fit?
Well, I think most of us aren't disputing. We just want to make sure we're clear. There is another process. It's difficult. And it could be tried. It was, in fact, done on this property. It could be tried. The question is it in the public policy of the state to make people go through it? You know, if this area is essentially already committed to one particular use and it's not that much land out of the total ownership, blah, 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 blah. And I get it. I'm not trying to bias it. But
right.
I don't want the whole system aligned, because the guy who did Bandon Dunes by exception would probably be proud of his work, having used the exceptions process to build Bandon Dunes Golf Course. And it's, you know, it's called the exception for that reason. There's a rule, then there's the exception to the rule. This was obviously the exception to the rule for the existing footprint. The question is, and I wouldn't even say what you're proposing is a true one-off, because you're still allowing local government a conditional use permit, which isn't, as we've heard, particularly easy to get anyway, actually. And so, you know, I'm not trying to bias the proceedings, but, you know, we're looking at the whole system, not just every single proposal one-on-one.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have a comment followed by a question. I think the way that clients of mine have done this is you go to the planning department and you ask. And you say, would this possibly work? And the planner says, no, it's not even worth applying. Is that an accurate description of essentially what's occurred here?
We've had, you know what, I'd like to have someone else. Craig, could you come up? Would you mind if Craig Kilpatrick could come up? He's the other land use consultant involved in this and has worked very closely with both counties and with DLCD.
I'm 99% certain you could probably get all those people to come here and say that, but that's, you know, given what I know about their feelings on these processes, but it would help to know.
My name is Craig Kilpatrick, and I'm a land use consultant working on behalf of Young Life. And I think I'd like to have you rephrase the question, but before you do, I think the thing that's important is that as we go through our state statutes, as we look at the administrative rules, as we go and we look at the local ordinance, there's no provision for a youth camp. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not one of those boxes we get to check, because it doesn't fit anything. And so you start out going to these counties and you say, can I get a youth camp approval? And they go, well, we don't have a category. Go someplace else. We go and we talk to DLCD, which we did. We had site visits with John Jennings. We had conversations with multiple other folks that essentially said, well, you know, you guys really need to think about getting something done at the legislative level, because we haven't thought about this. I mean, let's think back, folks. 40 years ago, nobody thought a youth camp was something that we needed to deal with in terms of an outright use or a conditional use. And so finding the way to get there is virtually impossible, in our opinion, without coming back to this. Now, can I have somebody come back and say, no way, it can't be done? Of course it can be done if we're willing to risk the opportunity to go out there and do it. We might be able to get it done in 4 or 5 years, but we don't know, because everything is so loose in the way that system is devised. There's no way to have us have any kind of efficient, effective means of getting where we want to go except the one that we've come to ask you for. Representative Davis, did you want to re-ask your question?
Now I'm trying to. I'm so interested now. What was my question?
Was there an application or a conversation with the specific counties involved about using the exceptions process
there
for the expansion?
There was no application and multiple conversations.
Which is follow-up.
Yeah, follow-up.
Which was my point, is that clients I deal with, you don't just apply. You go talk with the planner and your commissioners, and they say, well, I can't tell you yes or no until you apply, but I'm giving you a 99.9% no, and when you apply, it's going to be 100% no.
I think that's very fair to say, and I do this for a living. I do dozens and dozens of applications in multiple counties in Central Oregon every year, including some destination resort projects, and the process is a nightmare. I mean, it really is.
I agree. Representative Unger.
So you did ask, and they did say 99. You asked, can we get through the exception process, and what did they say?
I asked them, what do you think the odds would be, and it was slim and none.
So since I got you here, when I heard about this, I started thinking about all the different camps that I went to as a kid, like Camp Arowana, Arowana, near Rippling River.
That's what you remember. So
are you sure? It's a Baptist camp. It's not marijuana.
Okay.
Arowana. There's one up Little North Santiam that's some sort of camp.
Cascade.
Yeah, Cascade.
Yeah.
How are those? Are they just, were they pre-1970 or are they?
Oh, pre.
Are they somehow some other?
Well, they may not even have to been pre-1970. I mean, you could have, if some of those counties adopted their zoning ordinances a later date, it would only have to be pre that.
Mm-hmm. For example, all of them predate the land use system in some way, or they might have been approved under some other deal?
Well, if they're at a smaller scale, it's possible that they were approved by another means, but I'm not aware of the specifics on these.
I think they're mostly in forest zones in that case, you know, in the ones I'm thinking of. Camp Myrtlewood, there's quite a few of these.
You know, forest zones do have provisions for hunting lodges and guest accommodations of smaller scales, and a lot of those camps, I believe one of the Young Life camps started out as a seminary, so... Hmm.
That's interesting. I sort of, when I first saw the bill, thought there was an outright exception for some sort of youth camp, and I looked for it. I couldn't find it either. But
yeah, it's a good question. Have there been any youth camps cited in Oregon since the land use, other than Washington Family Ranch?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a basketball camp.
Yeah, that's true. The Vernonia one?
McKenzie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thinking what to...
That's interesting. Okay. Well, sorry not to get off topic.
Yes,
we're still here.
Vice Chair Cameron.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Linda, I don't know if I heard the amount of investment that would be potential invested. I think we heard $34 million in the camp that just got completed. What would be the dollar investment over a period of the years if the land use issue was taken care of?
Chair Clem, members of the committee, we're anticipating a $75 million will be invested in these new camps, if not more.
That's just capital, not ongoing new hiring, et cetera.
And
follow-up?
Yeah, just thank you. That's a lot of money, but I don't know. We heard some testimonies about kids' lives. What's that worth? Thank you.
Okay, that's all I've got. We've got a little written testimony here from John Skidmore out in Jefferson County, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, and the Michael Morrissey at the DLCD. We'll make sure it's in the record. And other than that, thank you for being here. And we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3098 and adjourn the House Land Use Committee.
Thank you very much.